Good morning and welcome to another episode of In Conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. My guest in this morning is Amit Mehta and Erica Lauren James. Warm summer days, cool pleasant nights, and a more intimate music experience. But would you go to a concert if you didn't know who was playing or even where it was being held until right before the show? So to talk about it all is my very first guest this morning, Amit Mehta. And Amit is the founder and the city lead of Good Company Productions. Together with a team made up of students, young professionals, and industry leaders, Amit works to create and provide unique, curated musical experience in the Kitchener-Waterloo community. Since 2017, Amit and the team have hosted secret, invite-only pop-up concerts across the region featuring unconventional venues such as museums, living rooms, hair salons, tech offices, and more, and showcasing a mix of local and international musicians to an always attentive audience. Upon graduating from the University of Waterloo early this summer with a degree in nanotechnology engineering, Amit has now relocated permanently to downtown Kitchener and continues to work his full-time job at Shopify as a launch engineer while scaling out new community initiatives for Good Company Productions. So thank you so much, Amit, for joining me in studio this morning, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. Going back to where it all started from being an engineering student to getting into music and all the genres that you've been doing, where did that begin?
Yeah, so I was just saying it all started in high school. So it started with Air Cadets. Started out playing in a drum line there, learned how to pick up drums a little bit. Then I got into jazz, played jazz band in high school, concert band. As I moved into university, I couldn't really bring a drum kit with me, so I started exploring world percussion, hand drums, and things like that. And as you start to do that, it expands your horizons, not just in the types of music that you listen to, but the types of people that you perform with. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, it started to expose me to different genres of music, different pockets of creativity, not just around Kitchener-Waterloo. I was here at the time just for school, right? So I wasn't really, you could say, as invested in exploring the region. But it kind of spirals from there. Once you find a circle that that allows you growth, right, then you invest in it. And so from university, from the beginning of university, it started with just hand drums. Then it got into keyboard, synthesizers, vocals. Now I do production. And then eventually it spun out into live music production. So now it's I call it my real job. I call Shopify my side hustle. I know one from work. It definitely takes up a little bit more time, a little bit more effort, but it's a lot more fulfilling to be able to work with different musicians, different genres, and kind of push the horizons of what you're exposed to as well.
And you also have your own band that brought the interest into music for you, right? Or was it something you developed after? Where did that begin from?
So when I was in high school, I played in a handful of different bands. I used to do session drumming every now and then as well. When I moved to university, you start to just meet new people who are doing things which you've never seen before. I'm from a small town, so to me, Kitchener-Waterloo is the big city. And as you are exposed to all these different creative people, you just want to be a part of it inherently. That's kind of my personality type. It started out with that. I started playing with a few bands, and then as you start to perform, you meet other musicians who are also looking for performance opportunities. I'm a relatively organized person, so it started out with me just booking gigs for people, and then it kind of grew into, why don't we just host our own shows, right? At the time, I was going to Toronto for a lot of shows. And one of my friends there, John, who at the time worked for the Aga Khan Museum, he was the artistic curator, he said, why are you driving down? Why don't you just start something in Kitchener-Waterloo?
And perfect.
That's how it began, yeah.
And you started this company called Good Company Production. So what does Good Company Production, what does it encompass of, and what do they bring out to the community?
Yep. So Good Company Productions is relatively recent. We started it earlier this summer, but it piggybacks off of an organization that my team and I were a part of since 2017, which was So Far Sounds Waterloo. we transitioned into our own venture so that we could have a little bit more freedom in how we operate. Mm-hmm. And how Good Company Productions works is we host front-facing events that are designed to help support emerging musicians. So low ticket price shows, which are more accessible to the public, mm-hmm. but also in a way where we can fill the room and the musician doesn't have to worry about that. So it gives them a platform to either test out new music or to practice performance if they mm-hmm. haven't had that many opportunities in the past. And so that portion of Good Company Productions is all about crafting very unique, very curated experiences for everyone involved. That is very community-centric. Mm-hmm. However, doing that style of event doesn't bring in revenue. And you need revenue to be able to compensate your artists, to be able to pay
absolutely
things like taxes. And as I learn more and more about being an adult, just different fees that cost yes. money to exist. And so how we fulfill that need for revenue is by taking on production contracts. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of work with the city of Kitchener, with the city of Waterloo, a lot of corporate clients, mostly in tech in Kitchener-Waterloo, mm-hmm. to do things like provide musicians for lunch or provide musicians for a large corporate event. Or sometimes we'll go all the way to scaling out a full production for them, mm-hmm. whether it be a keynote speaker or a full-on party. But we use revenue from that stream to be mm-hmm. able to sustain the more accessible shows that we do. And this all stems back to Good Company Productions. The reason that we went with Good Company as the name mm-hmm. is because at the end of the day, our motivation is not profit. Our motivation is sustainable creativity in the region.
Absolutely.
Right? And when you're at our shows, as we look around us, we always feel that we're in good company, whether it be the guests or the venue hosts or the musicians.
I like that.
And that's what motivated the name. So we're pretty open to taking on new collaborations mm-hmm. and being able to support different initiatives. That's kind of the goal here.
And where did this whole idea of pop-up concerts emerge from? And what is pop-up concerts?
So the whole idea of a pop-up session is to be able to take a musician out of a regular context, like a bar, and give them a platform to perform where all eyes are on them. So how it works is the musicians are top secret and the venue is top secret. And you basically apply or register for a show only knowing the date. For the guest, it's a little bit adventurous, it's a little bit of a risk, but that's part of the experience.
Okay.
Right? So you're not going to see a musician that you know of a lot of the time. It's about exposing yourself to new spaces and new types of music. The location is revealed a day before the show. Mm-hmm. So we have a show tomorrow, the location is out today. And often these spaces are not typically used for music. So we go in and we totally change it up. It might be a space that you're familiar with, or it might be a space you've never been in before.
Yeah, because you've had museums, you've had living rooms, you've had hair salons, and you set up with all the equipment and stuff. So yeah, that's so very interesting.
It's a lot of work, but it's also a really good learning opportunity for our team because we're not working with spaces that are acoustically treated. So for the sound team, it's a new challenge every show. For mm-hmm. our operations team, it's about staging the venue to make it comfortable for guests. For marketing, it's like, how do you even make this work lighting-wise for photographers? And mm-hmm. It's a challenge every time, and it's a new challenge every time, but we've gotten pretty good at it. At this point, we've done well over 50 shows. Yeah, so it's when you look at it from a guest experience perspective, it is just as much about the space that you're in together as it is the musicians you're listening to.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you're kind of sharing that moment together. Mm-hmm. For the musician, we have a rule at our shows, which is when someone is performing on stage, no one in the audience is speaking. So for the musician, it means they're not competing with people having conversations at a bar. Yeah. All eyes are on them. They are the focus. And then in between sets is where guests get up, mix and mingle. They get to interact with the venue, mm-hmm. see the venue in a different light. And
absolutely.
For a lot of people, it's often a space that they haven't been to or they didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for us, this is really how we're trying to create community. As we've gone through and done more and more shows, you start to see people who have met each other at previous shows now coming together.
Yes.
Or inviting friends.
And I've attended one of your shows and it's fabulous. And I bumped into people I knew there who said they came in the first time and loved it. And they've been coming for a couple of your shows.
Yeah.
So
it's really cool. It's validating to see that.
Yes.
To be a part of it. Yeah.
So how important has it been to have students as a part of your team? Because you know, you have a lot of students that support you. So is that intentionally, or is it to give them that experience? So being a mentor yourself, how has this played into getting them involved in your company?
The fact that we have so many students on the team is a direct product of the fact that I was in school when we started this,
mm-hmm.
right? So I was at the beginning of my third year or the end of my second year, I don't remember. And at the time, everyone who started with me, with the exception of two people, were students. We weren't necessarily classmates. We had just known each other. Some were students that I was mentoring. Others were students that were mentoring me. We had a few people who were graduated. One of my co-founders is Robert Bruski, who's also the CFO of Control V.
Mm-hmm.
But he is someone that I've created a few different ventures with, and he helped navigate this whole process. Students, in how it works within our team, is it's really a community-oriented group. So although we are biased towards students on the team, it's because we started out that way.
Okay.
We also have people who are all the way up to their 60s and 70s on the team.
Wow.
So it's quite the spread. We are constantly looking for mentorship opportunities, both mm-hmm. for ourselves and to give others. So last year we did a brief stint where we actually took in high school students and showed them how to use some of the audio gear. Students who were doing technical course, they actually got hands-on experience producing shows. And when we have smaller shows, that's totally doable for us.
Totally.
We've done it with photographers and videographers before, because we work with so many great community photographers.
Mm.
They're more than happy to lend mentorship opportunities as well. The challenge really comes in the frequency of shows, because we do them pretty often,
mm-hmm.
and there's not often a lot of time to learn. Because when you walk into a space, it's different every time, which means that our team is learning on the spot and then trying to provide that feedback to the mentees. But yeah, it's been interesting to see the team grow. It is something that we've been really intentional about, putting ourselves in positions with the pop-up shows where we would be exposed to something new, mm-hmm. so that we can take that knowledge, use it to level ourselves up, and then implement it on a paid opportunity.
For sure.
Right? So this is how students who start out as volunteers on the team can slowly move up to a point where they're out getting their own paid gigs.
So what drives you to scale out into the community with these initiatives? I know community building is huge with shows like these, and you know, you connect with a lot of them, but what drives you to do what you're doing?
Yeah, I think to answer this question, there's another question that needs to be answered, which is like the main reason that I'm now so rooted in Kitchener-Waterloo, and it is the community, right? So I've done 6 co-op terms, some of them in Toronto, one of them was in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, but I've moved around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not very old, but I feel weird saying that, but we're going to go with it. But Kitchener-Waterloo is the first place where I truly felt like people around you want to inherently support you in what you do.
Very true.
That doesn't mean that like they want to give you false confidence. It means that they want to help you explore what the right path is for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we hear people, especially in creative arts, talk about the term collaborate before compete. And I think it's really, I say it a lot, it's really easy to misinterpret it. Collaborate before compete does not mean that you just work with anyone. It means that you're intentional with the people that you work with, but mm-hmm. you boost those around you who are doing things that you believe in.
Absolutely.
And in Kitchener-Waterloo, I've seen people do that more than anywhere else. So for us, for me at least, it's really about figuring out how we can be a part of that and how mm-hmm. we can give other people opportunities to support each other. We have a pretty engaged following, and if we can leverage that to give local musicians and local venues opportunities to get in front of them and just kind of say what they need to say, then we're going to do it, because it all circles back, right?
Mm-hmm.
The more growth that we can help facilitate,
absolutely,
the more opportunities for growth it will give us in the future. And I think if you go in with that mindset and it's positive intent, everyone around you is going to grow, and they're going to pull you up when you need it.
Absolutely. So. And you've got great support even from the city, from the region, and they've supported your programs that you've put forward. What kind of music can the audience expect when they come in? Because it's, for one, it's a secret. They have no idea. So how has that varied?
So we always try and keep it mixed up at shows. And that's because you're right. Like, you don't know what you're going into.
Mm-hmm.
So you have no expectations, realistically, walking into that show. We like to keep it diverse. Our normal shows have three different musicians. The goal is that at least one of those acts is someone that you love. One is a musician that you would not otherwise listen to, and one is something that you've never heard before because you've never been exposed to it. So I'll give you
an example.
Could
that vary in language as well?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we've had international artists. We've had musicians come in from Australia before.
Wow.
Yeah, from all around the globe. But I'll give you an example. We had a show this week on Tuesday. It was a two-act show, so a little bit different. But the first act was an operatic singer from Juilliard, from New York City. Something that people would not often see in an intimate setting, sitting on the floor 2 feet away from him. Typically, it would be on a large stage,
absolutely,
$100 ticket,
yes,
in New York City. Very cool experience. Very cool for me, too. I almost teared up. I did tear up. And then the following act was an R&B and soul singer from Guelph. So two totally different genres, totally different niches of music. And I don't think that there are many shows that you could go to where you would see those two genres on the same bill.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
So that's kind of the point of it. And taking it a step further than that, there's nowhere else that you're going to get that same experience in terms of the location. When you go back to that venue, you are going to remember a memory, an experience that happened, which no one else will ever replicate. There's no way those two musicians are getting into that room again.
Yes. So. And these artists that come by from wherever you've sourced them from, do they get hired by you? Or is it, like, how does that work? Because international artists are expensive too.
Yeah, so how we do it is, these shows, because the musician cannot advertise it, what we'll do is look for musicians who are going on a tour and then fit it in on their off nights. But often musicians will reach out to us. So I'd say about 70% of the musicians that we've worked with have come to us before we've reached out to them. And then it will take us sometimes upwards of a year to slot them in. So right now we're working with musicians who are planning tours for like summer 2020 and working dates in with them.
So if local artists need to reach out to you and say, okay, I'm a performer, I would like to perform at your thing, how do they do that? What's the procedure here?
Yeah, so typically a lot of artists are referrals from other musicians who have played at our shows.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we'll get reach outs over Facebook, Instagram, or email. So if you're a musician and you're listening to this and you want to perform, all you have to do is email artists@goodcoprod.ca.
Okay.
And then our artist team will see it. They'll send you an email and ask for a few different live videos so that we can see what kind of music you perform.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing we're also looking for is like how you interact with the crowd. So you've been to a show and you know that there's not, for the musician, there's not a lot to hide behind.
Absolutely.
When they're not playing music.
Absolutely.
They have to be able to interact with the crowd.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice that when I attended one of the shows, the artists kind of weave into their own stories through the music that they're playing and keep the audience engaged as well. So that I found was very interesting. And you're kind of focused on what they say, even between the breaks they take in to perform the next act.
Yep, exactly. It's all part of the experience. It's something that you wouldn't hear from them if you were just watching them at a bar.
There's something about the community that comes together too, right? They're all there for the same reason. They're all there to listen to the same music. Yet, it's a surprise for everyone. So this curiosity, there's people who have never met before, this communication that goes on, new friends are made. Yeah, I loved it. And you also have liquor served sometimes.
Yeah, so we've been serving alcohol at our shows since the very beginning.
Okay.
Recently, we've started exploring local partnerships where different breweries come in and serve. And that's just because, like, in April 2018, the cost of an SOP, which is the license that you need, literally doubled overnight.
Wow.
And so, and that was like, that meant that we either had to double our prices to guests or take a loss on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the bar doesn't always break even, but it's just a nice thing to have because it helps you reduce that barrier with strangers when you have a few drinks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about showcasing local. So at the show that you came to, we were featuring three different local breweries.
Absolutely.
And so that's something that we like to do at our shows. We've also started to incorporate local vendors, whether they be makers or artists or whatever. Just because like we know we have that engaged audience. We know that you're going to be in that room for 3 hours. What interactions can we create for you that will be memorable, not just for you, but memorable to those people that you're interacting with?
For sure. So how do you think industry leaders can help support this community through your venture or the events that you put up?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the challenges that we're facing right now is lack of time, which we can't really add hours to the day, so I'll deal with it. But funding. So we are net positive at this moment, but in order for us to scale and be able to support the initiatives that are out there, we need funding. We're a for-profit company, and that was intentional. By design, I want to be able to prove that the creative arts can be sustainable on their own without having to rely on grants. I think grants are amazing. I think it's a resource that if you have access to it, you should take advantage of it.
For sure.
But at the same time, I would like to be part of changing the narrative about musicians having to solely rely on grants. So we, in our way, in our own way, are trying to bring in revenue that we can then put out to those who need it, not as a grant, but as an offering, basically, of we want to support you doing what you're doing. And once you've done that thing, come back and you perform at one of our shows. All of it circles back. Right now, where we need the most support is a little bit of extra funding right at the beginning because our initial startup costs are so high. So I've put all my money into it, but I also just finished school and I have a ton of student loans to pay off.
Absolutely.
And it's like living paycheck to paycheck while starting a new job, while paying off student loans, while starting a new company is difficult. And I'm all in, right? Everyone on our team, I can't ask that of everyone because commitment levels are different, but everyone is all in their own way. And that little bit of external help would just push us, right?
For sure.
People offer it in their own ways. Like Misty from the city of Kitchener has been a great mentor to me, and she supports us in networking opportunities, which to me are the most valuable thing.
For sure. Right? Networking is huge, and
and
this community supports that so much.
So it's just that little push, right? But even if we didn't get it, we can still do it. I'm a big follower of Stoicism, and one of the things in Stoicism is the obstacle is the way. And it basically means, like, if you're ever faced with an obstacle, you find a way over it.
Absolutely.
Right? So we'll figure it out.
Absolutely. So if people need to reach out, you know, look at these concerts and register for it, where do they go?
Yeah. So the best place right now is social media.
Okay.
On Facebook or Instagram, it is Good Company Productions. And there's a link in each of those pages to upcoming shows. I'm working on building out the website, but like I said, time is a challenge right now.
It is.
yeah, so it'll come. But in the meantime, socials are the easiest way.
Okay. And they can just find the details there, sign up, get their tickets, and it'll be a surprise.
You will find limited details there.
Okay. Yes.
Intentionally,
absolutely. So that's wonderful. And if volunteers need to be a part of it, students or otherwise, again, they go up to the same website?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
We have a lot of people just approach us at shows who want to learn about X, Y, or Z.
Okay.
And then we'll have them out to a show, we'll teach them what they need to learn. And from there, if they want to go further and look for paid opportunities, then we'll scale them up and get them to that point.
That's great. Thank you so much, Amit, for joining me in studio this morning and sharing your passion and drive with us. Stay tuned, guys. Next guest is Erica Lauren James, who will join me shortly to share and tell all life-changing journeys. So stay tuned. I'll be right back. So I'm here with Erica Lauren James, who is a sales manager at Closet Couture Boutique. And Erica is a 51-year-old proud parent of two adult children, advocate for LGBTQ2S+ communities, PFLAG chapter leader, a public speaker, as well as a future politician who happens to be an amazing transgender woman. Now, Erica is proud to share her personal stories of resilience, hope, and trust in public spaces in hopes to pave the way for other transgender women and the community around them towards a life of more self-love and acceptance. She is here to speak candidly and openly about what it was like to transition from a male to a female. So thank you so much, Erica, for coming in and for doing this and sharing your journey so people can even understand and goes into it. And where did this journey begin for you?
Well, thanks, Rashmi. It's a privilege being here. This journey, I guess, technically began, you know, probably when I was 7, 8 years old, but officially began when I was, I think, 47. I waited a long time and I've arrived.
And going back, you said you realized at a very early age that this was not your body. Like, how was that this was not you?
I think, like, anybody who is transgender, you just know. You just know. You try to bury it. Like, you know what? After my teen years, I thought I was the only person in the world like this, because this is back in the early 80s, no internet. Mm-hmm. So on. So, like, I thought I was the only person in the world like this, and what was the hell wrong with me? That's all I thought about, and so on. And then, so I tried to bury it, but eventually I discovered who I was. And
going through those years where the stigma was still on and talking to somebody about it was a hard choice to make, how did you deal with that growing up from the time you realized, okay, this was not what I am, this is not me? Because I remember in one of our conversations before we started, was you always knew, because you have siblings who were more focused into, you know, hands-on stuff with your dad, but you were focused on doing your own little thing, painting your nails, doing stuff like that. But going into college, meeting friends, how difficult was it to talk to people about it at that point? Or did you even talk to people about it?
I didn't. I kept to myself. People, nowadays I say that years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, also, my life, I was what would be considered to be an introvert. Mm-hmm. And they are shocked. No way, you can't possibly be an introvert. I said, well, I was, because you know what? When I was home, in my bedroom when I was younger, and then when I was on my own, living on my own after I was divorced and so on, if I just stayed home, I could just be myself. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't need to be somewhere, I stayed home and I just was myself. That's where I could do it and so on. I always say that, you know, I went to Montreal and I lost two of them. But all through my 30s and even my early 40s, I didn't have the balls to just go for it and mm-hmm. just transition and become who I was. Because trying to be two different people at the same time is a challenge.
It is.
It's very time consuming. It's time wasting. But, you know, that's how I kind of coped and so on. And because there was nobody I could really talk to. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't start talking to people until I went to some of my first support groups. That was probably not until 30-ish. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a while.
So when you started talking to people about it at that time, what was the reaction? Because you had your family to face, you had your own siblings and your mom and your dad to face and tell them what was going on. How was that journey?
Well, my siblings and my parents, they knew. Mm-hmm. Simply because my dear sister, who's listening, they actually had to put a lock on my sister's door. And I was very crafty. I was able to put a credit card or a piece of plastic down the side of the door and open it up.
You figured that out.
and get what I needed. But yeah, like, so they all knew. And even people throughout my life have known, because when I finally did come out officially, which was like October of 2014, they said, it's about time. You know, it's about time. We knew it's about time you're reading yourself. And you know what? I am very blessed. I have not had, I shouldn't say not have, one experience, minor experience, but I've never had any bad experiences from anybody, you know, so I'm a very blessed, you know, I almost consider myself to be a very privileged transgender woman, simply because I don't go through a lot of the stuff that other transgender individuals go through.
Mm-hmm. And what would that be?
Oh, there's constant verbal, emotional, physical abuse, you know, on November the 20th, 21st, I should know this date, I organized things with this, but that's the Transgender Day of Remembrance. Mm-hmm. And usually it's like 340, 360 transgender individuals, mostly women and mostly women of color, mm-hmm. Are murdered simply because they're transgender.
Wow.
And then they see how they're murdered. It's absolutely
insane and crazy. Mm-hmm. So that's where that's kind of why I do what I do, and as vocal as I am, because the more people that just the general population interacts with that is transgender, you know what, hopefully they can get over their fear, fear of change, and, you know, just embrace that, you know what, I'm just like anybody else. I'm no different. Just I was born a boy and now I'm a girl. So.
And your transition from a male to a female, mm-hmm. that transition also took a long time for you in terms of medically too. Do people go through medical procedures?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And like for myself, like my ex-wife and I, we officially were divorced in 2005. I waited almost 10 years to finally decide to transition. A lot of that was because, again, like I said before, I didn't have the guts to do it. Mm-hmm. But also, I had two kids at the time who were 6 and 8 years old. I coached their soccer teams. I went on all their school trips. I was the president of the school parent association. I just thought that'd be very challenging for all of a sudden, you know, here's dad coaching their teams, and all of a sudden now here's dad, but looks like a woman now coaching the teams. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to wait until my kids are older, and then mm-hmm. and then I can start the process and so on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it, it's a little bit better now with the government. It used to take almost 2 to 3 years to go through the whole CAMH process with a gender identity clinic in Toronto. Now you can go see your various other doctors, and they can do the referral for OHIP in mm-hmm. order to get your approval.
Okay.
In order to go to, at the time, the only place in Canada that did the surgeries for bottom surgery was in Montreal.
Oh, they have nothing here.
It just started last month, I believe, at the Women's Hospital in Toronto. Just started doing the surgeries in Toronto, and I believe in BC they're starting that next year. So it's getting better.
So you have kids, and yep, that journey has been difficult in terms of has it been?
It's a journey for everybody. It's not just a journey for myself. It's a journey for my kids, a journey for my ex-wife, a mm-hmm. journey for my siblings, for my own parents. It was just my dad. My mom passed away back in 1990.
Okay.
Had she been around, though, I totally believe that she wouldn't have let me wait 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
She would have said, you know, the hell with this crap, you know, get out the pot. This is who you are. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So, but yeah, no, it's definitely a journey. It hasn't been perfect. My kids weren't, and probably to this day, aren't thrilled. But, you know, people go, well, really? I say, well, yeah. Like, you know, what child, you know, goes to bed at nighttime thinking, you know what, my goodness, I hope one day my dad comes to me and says, you know what, honey, you know what, son, I'm not a boy, I need to become a girl.
Mm-hmm.
There's no child in the world that hopes for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a million years, and vice versa for a parent. No parent hopes their child comes to them one day and says, hey, mom, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. Mm-hmm. Because you know what, nobody goes through this just for the fun of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. People go through this because you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. Now, could I have not ever transitioned? Absolutely. Would I have been as happy and as outgoing and what I would consider be making a difference in the world without transitioning? No, I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. And for you as well, challenges of being accepted in society, being accepted with family, you said you were blessed. However, a lot of stress has gone into, well, trying to, you know, deal with different scenarios, be it your kid's soccer team or the school president, and, you know, at different stages. So as a person, for you to deal with it yourself, how has that played on? Because it takes a toll in no matter how accepted you are in your family still to go out and be out in the public.
Absolutely. It's definitely... is for the longest time I would not go into like a Reitman's or a Sushi Shear because it was a ladies store. As soon as I walked in, the first thing the staff does is they come and talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to do was talk to somebody, because you know what, overall, you know what, I can go in public and pass no problem and just go about my business and so on. The only thing I don't particularly like is my voice. You know, now I can make it sound better, you know, if I put effort to it, but people tell me, you know what, but then that's not you, so just be you. So, and you know, with the store that I run, Classic Couture Boutique, you know, I'm just me, you know, like I do these live videos all the time to advertise for our store, And you know what? It's just me. I don't worry about, you know, what people are thinking, what not thinking. Not to say that, you know what? I don't worry about it, but then I also do worry about it at the same time. You know, like, you know, because, you know, sometimes, you know, if you're out and about and, you know, you get a second or a third look. Why are you getting that second or third look?
Mm-hmm.
Do they think you look great? Or do they think, oh, I think that used to be a dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? You you have to be positive. You have to not let these things get to you. And for the, you know, what, 98% of the time, I tend to lean towards the positive and don't let things get to me.
That's part of thing. And that's huge.
You know what? I've bawled for a whole day and cried. And
joining the group that you've joined to get the support and help to talk about it, mm-hmm. has that helped to a great extent?
It has. I used to go to a group here in Cambridge, and then there's a group here in Brantford now. I haven't been to it as much in the last little while, with working and doing different things I'm doing. I just don't seem to have the time to get there and so on. But it definitely helps, and I think that even the PFLAG group, it certainly helps. But I think mainly now I would probably go to these things and do these things simply because not necessarily for my own personal benefit, mentally or emotionally,
mm-hmm.
but I would do it for, you know, what I can do to help others. Because,
okay.
you know, it could be people just in the beginning process and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I go? And I think that, you know, as they see somebody that, an individual, probably in the park one time when I was there, I didn't know this individual. He was a transgender guy. And he goes, you're the Erica. I said, yes, I am. And he says to me, he goes, I said, is that a good thing? Yeah. And then he goes, you're my inspiration. And I said, well, thank you, but why?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, because you're there, you arrived, you're doing it, you got it. And I said, well, thanks, but nobody really has arrived or got it. If you're not progressing and moving forward, then, you know what, different times where I go speak, I always say, you know what, you might as well go to Home Depot, pick yourself up a shovel, go into your backyard, dig yourself a 6-foot hole, and jump in. Because, you know what, if whether you're transgender or cisgender or whatever you are, if you're not progressing and moving forward, then you need to really evaluate where you're at, what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
so you are able to become a better person and improve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And having that mindset that you have also helps you to move on and do what you're doing in the community. And whether people like it or not, this is me. This is who I am. You still move on.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I decided to run municipally,
mm-hmm.
For Ward 2 councillor back in October, yeah, I thought, you know what? It's time that, you know, especially our city council is filled with 10 men and one woman. Most of them are old men who've been there for, like, you know, 20 years, 25 years on council. So, and that's part of the reason why I'm running, and at some point in time I'll run federally or provincially. It's just that I think that the world and these places where the decisions and laws are made, they need a different perspective. They
Absolutely.
Need a unique perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, myself, you know, being a guy and a male and having male privilege to now being a female, and now males think that you can't do nothing,
mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting. And so I kind of can see the perspective
both.
From both sides. So I think that, you know, that would be very valuable to have, you know, in the legislature in Toronto or House of Commons or City Council or wherever that ends up being and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I'm going to pursue for sure, and I'm going to.
You're going to run again?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So, what is Closet Couture Boutique all about? How did that happen?
Well, that was quite interesting because after the municipal election, the night of, I felt good at a little party gathering, but when I drove home, and I went by my one large sign on Brantford, which is a pretty busy street on Brantford in the city of Brantford. I thought, oh gosh, I had to take that down. And I tore all my stuff off my car, threw it in the car, and I thought, you know what, I can't leave any signs nowhere, you know, for people to see tomorrow morning. So I spent the next 4 hours going through the ward, taking all my signs down. And then people would talk to me and say, oh, you did such a great job, you should be so proud of yourself. And then I would just bawl.
Oh.
It was so bad. I was so emotional for probably about a day and a half. But the next day, I saw a posting on Facebook for this closet couture job. The closet couture boutique, it's owned by Nova Vida, which is our domestic violence women's shelter in Brantford. And so we get a lot of donations. So we service our residents and our clients that come to us. And then the surplus stuff comes to our store. We sell it. Mm-hmm. And then we, all the money goes back to our shelter to help us with our programs and services. So when I saw that, I found out what was going on. I contacted Char, who was running at the time. So what's happening? She told me, and I said, okay. So I applied for it. I got the job I have now in December of 2018. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's awesome. I absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. Love dealing with the customers, the volunteers, the people. But we're a nonprofit. We never charge tax.
Mm-hmm.
And
where is the store located?
It's at 415 Fairview Drive.
Okay.
It's across from Sayers, in the Speakeasies, Brant Sports little plaza.
Okay. So when customers come in, you said this, but the volunteers that help out and everybody, and I've seen a few of your video clips where, you know, they're supporting you, you're doing this dance in the rain. And
Yeah.
So having that support in the community is a huge part of who your identity is as well, mm-hmm. and being accepted. Moving forward, what is it that you see for yourself, and where other transgender women or anybody else trying to transition, what would you tell them?
Well, you just have to believe in yourself. You have to find a few people that you can mentor from and learn from and so on, because those are the people who are going to be able to get you through those hurdles and where you need to go. You know, if you're in Brantford, you know, you go to the Gender Journey support group, which happens the second and the fourth Tuesday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Just be able to get the support you need. And if all else, you need to just believe in yourself and say, you know what, I'm going to do this. This is who I am. And you really got to not let the haters and the negative people affect you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes easier said than done, but yeah, like, you know, you have to just know this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, most people are able to do that, and they're able to move forward and to become, you know, who they're supposed to be. You know, because in my opinion, you know, everybody deserves to be real, genuine, and authentic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's, you know, regardless of what that is. You know, there's people who, I'm sure majority of people have little deep dark secrets they keep in the closet. But, you know, there's no reason to do that when you can just, you know, believe in yourself, you know what, be yourself, and then, you know what, hopefully the world, as time goes by, will get even more accepting, more considerate, more caring,
mm-hmm.
and then things will be better for everyone. And it's not just necessarily being transgender or something like that, but, you know, like, you have all kinds of different problems with Islamophobia, and you have all kinds of racism going on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that we are all humans. There's no reason for us to treat other people differently, because we're humans and so on. And, you know, I actually mm-hmm. spoke at a rally in Brantford at our MPP's office, and there's a bunch of pro-life people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the few things I said there was, you know, the people on the far right and the religious right, a lot of those people, not all of them, some of them are very nice, believe I probably shouldn't exist.
Wow.
But you know what? The thing is, I do. And the last time I looked in the mirror, I'm still a child of God, just like they are.
Mm-hmm.
But what really saddens me is, in all the years since I've transitioned into the 4 years, I've seen a lot of times where families just totally turn their back on an individual.
Absolutely.
Especially youth and the kids. It is so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I mentioned at the rally was, you know, so these people are against abortion. And personally, if I was able to have a child, I wouldn't have an abortion, but it's not my right to tell somebody else whether or not they can or not. So, and then I went on to say, but at 14 years old, their child comes to them and says, you know what, I'm gay, or I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. At that point, these people abandon and basically abort their child. And that's just wrong. So I hope that over time, we are going to be able to build more love, more acceptance in the world.
Sure.
And make people just friendly and happy and
more acceptable.
You know, get rid of the hate, you know, because the hate's not needed.
It's not. It's not. Thank you so much, Erica, for sharing your journey with us. And we wish you nothing but the very best. And as you continue doing some wonderful work that you've been doing, it's an absolute pleasure. So thank you. It's been a pleasure having
you
here.
Thank you, Rashmi.